buried note of pleading there as well.
All right, Karoli,
she said softly.
I won't.
Snapping on her climbing harness's feedlock again, she leaped backward one last time along the edge of the roof. And the safety line that her carefully choreographed sparring maneuvers had threaded neatly around behind Karoli snapped up tautly to catch the younger woman across the tops of her low boots. Flailing her knife uselessly as her feet were yanked out from under her, she fell with a painful-sounding thud flat onto her back. Shada was on her in an instant, one foot coming down on Karoli's knife wrist as she slapped away the other hand and then jabbed stiffened fingertips into the soft spot beneath her ribcage. With an agonized grunt, Karoli folded up around the impact and toppled over on her side. Shada jabbed again, this time behind Karoli's ear, and the younger woman relaxed and lay still. Breathing hard, Shada reached over and snatched the knife from Karoli's limp hand, cutting her safety line before she wound up tangled in it herself. The fight hadn't taken long and had been reasonably quiet, but odds were that Karoli's client had heard the ruckus and would be coming to investigate. If she could arrange to meet him halfway... A movement at the corner of her eye was her only warning, but it was enough. Even as she threw herself to the side in a flat dive, a blaster bolt sizzled through the air where she'd been standing. She rolled back to her knees, eyes sweeping the raised section of rooftop and locating her assailant. A prone figure in a black poncho and hood, the protruding snout of his blaster rifle tracking toward her. Snapping her hand up, Shada threw Karoli's knife toward him. The sniper rolled instantly to the side, leaning his head into the relative protection of his arms and rifle, the weapon now spitting its deadly fire on repeater mode as it tracked toward her. But in this case, the old bounty hunter's reflex had betrayed him. The knife spun precisely into its intended target. Not the dodging sniper himself, but the flicker of blaster fire from his weapon. It cut across right in front of the gun barrel, the bolts catching the blade and blasting it apart in a blaze of molten shards and reflected light. And for the next pair of heartbeats, the sniper would be effectively blind. Two heartbeats was all Shada needed. She came all the way up off the roof, leaping over the sputtering blaster fire now tracking blindly toward her, fingers darting into her plaited hair for one of the lacquered Zenji needles. It came free in a cascade of loosened coils, and as her feet hit the roof again, she threw it. And with a muffled clatter, the blaster fell silent. She was beside the sniper in an instant, twisting the weapon out of the dead man's hands and running across the roof. If the sniper was merely the backup and not the main attack, she might still have failed. Skidding to a halt beside the skylight, she crouched at its edge and peered down into the high-ceilinged room below. She hadn't failed. 3 meters below her was an ornate, decorated table, with Mazik and Griv on one side, and the Kubaz and a rough-looking human on the other. The two sides had already exchanged cases and were in the process of checking their new prizes. The Kubaz shut his case after what seemed to be a cursory examination, standing stiffly behind the table with an obvious air of expectation about him. It took Mazik another minute to be similarly satisfied with his side of the trade. Then he, too, closed his case. He nodded pleasantly to the Kubaz and took a step back from the table, his mouth moving with what were probably his usual farewell remarks. The Kubaz remained where he was, and as Mazik and Griv took another step back, his air of expectation gave way to one of puzzlement. His long snout twitched in indecision, clearly wanting to look up, but just as clearly not wanting to telegraph the surprise ending he was still expecting. Still, if a surprise was all he wanted, Shada could oblige him. Lining the blaster rifle up on the base of the alien's long snout, she tapped the barrel lightly against the skylight. All four of them looked up. The Kubaz's expression was impossible to read, but his companion's more than made up for it. His mouth fell open in stunned disbelief, his hand dropping to the blaster belted at his side. Shada shifted her aim to his forehead. Slowly, he raised the hand, empty to his chest. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Mazik throw her an abbreviated salute, and then he and Griv walked out of her field of view. Shada kept her weapon trained on the Kubaz and his friend for a count of 30. Then, throwing them the same salute Mazik had just given her, she backed away from the skylight.
"It's over?"
Kuroli's voice asked from behind her. Shada turned to look. The younger woman was standing beside the dead assassin at the edge of the upper roof, her expression impossible to read.
"Yes," Shada told her. "Your client decided not to go back on the deal after all."
Kuroli looked down at the body at her feet.
"The Eleven aren't going to be happy about this." "I'm used to people not being happy with me,"
Shada sighed, lowering the blaster rifle to the rooftop.
"I'll get by." "This is not a joking matter, Shada,"
Kuroli growled.
"You've been given a direct order. You stay with Mazik now, and they'll have a squad on you before the week's over." "I'm not staying with Mazik," Shada said. "As I told you, I'll resign as his bodyguard tonight." "And you think that will fix this with the Eleven?"
Kuroli scoffed.
"I suppose that depends on whether any of them still remembers who we are,"
Shada said, a deep sense of sadness flowing into her. A sadness that felt as if it had been collecting around her heart for a long, long time.
"The Mistral that I joined 22 years ago was an honorable clan of warriors, fighting to preserve what was left of our people. Honorable warriors don't knowingly deal in murder. I would hope at least some of the Eleven remember that." "Maybe the Eleven have changed."
Kuroli looked away across the dark rooftops of the city.
"Maybe the Mistral have changed." "Maybe they have," Shada said. "But I haven't."
She studied her friend.
"But then, neither of you."
Kuroli looked back at her.
"Really? I'd like to know what I said to give you that impression." "It's not what you said," Shada told her. "It's what you did. After I kicked your blaster away, when you pulled that knife on me." "Pulling a knife convinced you I was on your side?" "Yes," Shada said. "You still have my blaster."
Kuroli put her hand to her side.
"Yes, I suppose I do. I imagine you want it back?"
Shada shrugged.
"It might be harder to explain what happened here if you still have it when you get back to Emberlyne." "Point,"
Kuroli conceded. She flicked her wrist, and the blaster sailed in a flat arc to drop neatly into Shada's waiting hand.
"Speaking of Emberlyne, I'd stay away from there if I were you. For that matter, I'd stay away from any other Mistral, period. For the next 10 years, if you can manage it." "I won't need to hide that long," Shada said,
sliding the blaster back into its holster.
"Looks like the galaxy is coming to a boil again over this Ka'amas thing. The Eleven will soon have more important things than me to think about."
Kuroli spat something.
"Ka'amas. Ka'amas and Alderaan, and even that mudwater Nogri planet, Honiker. It almost makes me laugh sometimes when I think about which worlds get cried over." "Being bitter about it won't help,"
Shada said.
"So what will?"
Kuroli retorted.
"At least being bitter proves you're not dead yet."
"Perhaps," Shada said. "If that's what you're willing to settle for."
"I suppose you found something better?"
"I don't know," Shada said. "There has to be something, though."
She pointed to a small rectangular shed-like structure on the far side of the skylight.
"That the exit over there?"
"One of them,"
Kuroli said.
"If you don't mind taking a chance on running into the Kubaz and his pals on the way down."
Shada smiled tightly.
"They'll make room for me."
Almost unwillingly, Kuroli smiled back.
"I'm sure they will."
The smile faded.
"But understand this, Shada. Whatever I did here, I did it for... Well, the reasons are complicated. But if the Eleven send me after you...
I understand, Shada nodded. I'll try not to put you in this position again.
Never mind me,
Karoli said.
You just be careful of you.
She cocked her head slightly.
You have any idea what you're going to do?
Shada looked up at the stars.
As a matter of fact, she said quietly,
I do.
Hold still, please, sir,
the MD droid said in its deep voice, its mechanical fingers wielding the probe with microscopic precision as he lined it up.
I expect this to be the final pass.
Good, Luke said, taking a deep breath and cultivating his patience. He'd been sitting here for nearly half an hour now, but it was almost over. The droid eased the probe into Luke's right ear, with a sensation that oscillated between an itch and a tickle. Luke braced himself, and then, with a loud slurping sound, it was over.
Thank you, sir,
the MD said, lowering the probe into the reclamation container beside him and discharging a final few drops of Bacta into it.
I again apologize for the time and inconvenience this has caused you.
That's all right,
Luke assured him, sliding off the table and rubbing the last vestige of the itch tickle away with a fingertip.
I know it's easy to say there'll never be another Bacta shortage like the one during the war. It's not always so easy to believe it.
I was with this facility during that time. We could not afford to buy the black market Bacta, even if it had been available to us. I saw many die who could have been saved.
Luke nodded. And as a result, for the past 12 years, the medics in charge here had made it a rigid policy to conserve every single drop of Bacta, even to the point of siphoning it out of patients' ears when necessary. I can't say this last part was very pleasant. On the other hand, I'd hate to have arrived and found out you didn't have enough Bacta to treat me.
Perhaps it is simply the path of old habit. Still, I am told it is wise to remember the past.
It is indeed,
Luke agreed soberly, nodding to the Bacta reclamation container.
And even wiser to learn from it.
R2 was waiting in their assigned room, plugged into the desk and warbling softly to himself as he conversed with the medical facility's main computer. His dome swiveled as Luke came in, the warbling changing to an excited whistling.
Hi, R2, Luke said. Keeping busy?
The little droid made an affirmative-sounding twitter, which changed to something questioning.
Oh, I'm fine, Luke assured him, patting his side. Some of the shrapnel was in pretty deep, but they got it all out. A little dip in a Bacta tank, and I'm good as new.
The medic said I shouldn't fly for another hour or so, but it'll probably take that long to get the ship rolled out and prepped anyway. R2 whistled again, rotating his dome around in a complete circle.
Yes, I see they did a good job with you, too, Luke agreed. Did you ask them to take a look at the X-Wing?
Another affirmative twitter.
Good, Luke said. Then I guess the only question left is where we should go next.
R2's dome swiveled back again to face him. A distinctly suspicious note to his next warble.
We're not out here on vacation, R2, Luke reminded him, pulling up a chair beside the droid where he could keep an eye on the desk's computer display for more complicated translations.
We're here to track down those clones and find out where they're coming from. We're not going to accomplish that by going home to Yavin or Coruscant. He looked out the window at the hills rising steeply behind his room, a carpet of gold-colored grasses gleaming in the afternoon sunlight. Yes, the mission statement itself was perfectly straightforward. Unfortunately, the necessary procedure for completing it was anything but. He'd tried the surreptitious approach to that Kavrloo base. All he'd gotten for his trouble had been yet another swim in a Bacta tank. And, of course, the chance to see Mara again. He grimaced. Mara. He'd been expecting to run into her again ever since that pirate raid he and Han had thwarted off Iphigen.
In fact, he wouldn't put it past Han to have had something to do with Mara showing up at the Kauron asteroid field that way. He'd expected to run into her, and had secretly dreaded the prospect. And yet, looking back on it, the encounter hadn't been nearly as tense as he'd feared it would be. She'd been cooperative and polite, or at least as polite as Mara ever got. More significantly, the quiet but strong animosity he'd sensed radiating toward him at their last couple of brief encounters hadn't been present. Or maybe it had been there and he just hadn't noticed. Maybe his deliberately diminished use of the Force these days had simply prevented him from sensing that deeply into her mind without a deliberate probe. He scowled out at the hills. There was definitely some kind of cause and effect at work here. That much he was sure of. Question was, which was the cause and which the effect? R2 warbled questioningly.
"I'm trying to figure it out," Luke told him, glancing at the translation. "Just relax, okay?"
The droid warbled again and fell into an expectant silence. Luke sighed and settled back into his seat, gazing out at the hills. Mara was a puzzle, but she was a puzzle that would have to wait. At the moment, his immediate future was focused on this cloning question. His future. He glanced back at R2. The memory of their time with Yoda drifting to mind. Luke's Jedi training. And that first time he'd gotten a glimpse into the future. A glimpse that had nearly resulted in disaster. He'd rushed off madly to Cloud City to try to save Han and Leia. And had instead nearly gotten all of them killed. But he'd learned so much about the Force since then. And he had been able to draw other visions of the future without doing anything rash. Lately, his efforts in that direction had been strangely unrewarding. But as long as he was supposed to take it easy for an hour or so anyway, it wouldn't hurt to give it a try.
R2, I'm going to meditate for a while, he told the droid, slipping out of the chair and settling himself cross-legged on the floor. See if I can get some direction. Don't let anyone disturb me, all right?
The droid buzzed an affirmative.
Taking a deep breath, Luke closed his eyes and stretched out to the Force. His thoughts, his emotions, his entire being slipped into the proper pattern.
And suddenly, the whole universe exploded in front of him into a brilliant kaleidoscope of color and motion. He gasped, the vast image wavering momentarily like desert heat shimmer as he nearly lost control. It was like no vision he'd ever had before. Like nothing he'd ever seen before. 100 different scenes, 1,000 different possibilities, brilliant colors, sharp-edged sounds, joy and contentment, fear and death. All of it swirled together with the fury and randomness of a Tatooine sandstorm. Lines of possibility wove around each other, or else crashed together, sometimes merging, sometimes bouncing apart again. Always forever changed by the encounter. Familiar faces were there among unfamiliar ones, passing in front of him or else flickering behind other events unfolding at the edges of his sight. He caught a glimpse of Wedge and Rogue Squadron as they swept past in the fury of battle, saw his Jedi students inexplicably fanning out across the New Republic, leaving the Yavin Academy all but deserted, saw himself standing on a balcony against the wall of a darkened canyon, gazing down at a sea of thousands of tiny stars, saw Han and Leia facing a huge mob. Han? Leia! With an effort, he grabbed onto that last line, trying to stay with it long enough to see more. For a moment, he succeeded, the image sharpening into focus. Leia standing in a wide hallway, her lightsaber blazing in her hands as a mass of bodies pushed through a tall door. Han standing on an outside balcony with drawn blaster, looking down at the crowd.
The crowd inside flowed mindlessly forward.
A hidden rooftop sniper lined up his blaster rifle,
and then they were gone, vanishing into the swirling mass of sights and sounds. For a moment, Luke tried to join the flow himself, the taste of fear mixing with the other sensations of the vision as he tried to catch up and see what was going to happen to them. But they were gone. And with a sense that came from outside himself, he knew that he'd seen all of that vision that he was going to. Easing out of the flow, he made his way back to the single fixed point in the storm, the solidness of his own being. He'd learned all he could here, and now it was time to leave. He began to draw back, the vast array of images beginning in turn to recede and darken. And then, abruptly, one final vision appeared in front of him. Mara, surrounded by craggy rock and floating in water. Her eyes closed, her arms and legs limp, as if in death.
Wait!
He heard himself shout. But it was too late. Mara's image faded with the rest of the vision. And with a sudden gasp of air, he found himself back in his room, gazing out the window at the hills. Hills that no longer glowed golden, but were instead outlined by the subtler gloss of starlight.
Whoa, he muttered, rubbing his eyes. He would have sworn that vision had only lasted a few minutes.
Beside him, R2 twittered in obvious relief.
Yes, it took longer than I expected, too,
Luke agreed.
Sorry.
The droid warbled questioningly, getting to his feet, wincing at the sudden prickling sensation in muscles left too long in one position. Luke looked at the question scrolling across the computer display.
I don't know, he had to concede. I saw a lot of things, but I didn't see anything that seemed to have anything to do with our search.
Which might mean, he realized suddenly, that hunting for clones was no longer what he was supposed to be doing.
But then what was he supposed to do?
Go to wherever Han and Leia were and warn them? Go find Mara and warn her? He took a deep breath, shifting tired muscles.
Always in motion is the future,
Yoda had told him after that first vision on Dagobah. At the time, Luke had wondered about that remark. His vision of Han and Leia in Cloud City had seemed so simple and straightforward. But if Yoda had instead seen something more akin to this last vision, with all its tangles and complications, then it all made sense. Or had he seen something like that? Could it be that what Luke had experienced here was something entirely different? A special event, reserved for special occasions? It was an intriguing possibility. But for the moment, it was an issue he could put aside. What mattered was that he'd received the guidance he'd sought, and needed to act on it. All he had to do was figure out exactly what that guidance was. Stepping over to the window, he looked up at the stars.
You will know,
Yoda had also told him.
When you are calm, at peace.
Taking a deep breath, Luke set about calming his mind. R2's soft warbling was starting to take on a concerned tone by the time he turned back around.
All right, he told the droid. I saw a world with a wide, deep canyon that had buildings built into the sides and a lot of lights at the bottom. Check the main computer and see where that might be.
R2 warbled an acknowledgement and jacked into the computer outlet. Luke stepped to his side and watched as a planet name and description came up on the display.
No, it wasn't Belsavis, he said. The surface wasn't covered with glaciers, and there were no domes.
It was also a lot more pleasant. He frowned, pulling the image back from his memory.
There were bridges arching all the way across the canyon I saw. I saw a group of 9 of them, arranged in a diamond pattern, one starting on one level two more side by side, crossing from the next level down. Three on the next, then two, and then one.
R2 whistled and searched some more. A half dozen more systems scrolled across the display.
Wait a minute, Luke said. Back up one. Sajansage system. See if there are any pictures in the data file.
The display backed up, then altered to a succession of orbital, aerial, and ground pictures. Luke watched as they went past, and by the time the series came to an end, he knew it was the place.
That's it, he said. The canyonade on Sajansage. That's where we're going.
The droid twittered uncertainly, his question scrolling across the bottom of the display.
I don't know why, Luke told him. I just know I need to go there.
There was another twitter, this one sounding slightly incredulous.
To be honest, I don't understand it myself, Luke conceded. I saw a lot of things in that vision. Things that are happening or maybe are about to happen. I saw my students leaving the academy. Why, I don't know. I saw Leia and Han in some kind of trouble.
The droid warbled anxiously, and another question appeared.
No, I don't know if 3PO was with them, Luke told him. The point is that there are a lot of places out there we could go, where I might be able to affect things. Too many places.
He pointed at the view of the vast canyon.
But the canyonade is the only place where I actually saw myself. The one part of the vision where I felt peace.
He looked out at the stars again.
So that's where we'll go.
For a moment there was silence. Then R2 warbled again.
Point taken, Luke agreed with a smile. If we're going to go, let's stop dithering and go.
Besides which, he told himself as they headed for the docking bay,
Leia's a Jedi in her own right. She can take care of herself. And Han's got a long history of beating the odds, too. And Rogue Squadron could manage without him. And wherever his Jedi students had been going, they surely had a good reason for doing so.
Whatever this trip to Sajansage was all about, all of them could do without him for a while. 40 minutes later, once again in space, he pulled the hyperdrive lever and sent the X-Wing jumping to light speed, trying hard not to think about the vision he'd had of Mara.
Chapter 13.
Siuk Arausia, first secretary of the combined Bothan clans, was urbane, polite, and completely gracious. But beneath the polish, as near as Leia could tell, he also seemed genuinely surprised by her visit. And beneath the surprise, she suspected, was a great deal of worry.
You must understand my position here, Counselor Organa Solo,
he said for the third time as he ushered Leia, Han, and 3PO past the outer reception station and into the sumptuous three-story lobby atrium that filled the front third of the combined clan center building.
Your visit unannounced this way is highly irregular. Your request...
His fur twitched despite obvious efforts to control it.
Is even more so.
You have the letter from Gaversim, Han put in gruffly. You have the letter from Phalia. What more do you want?
The secretary threw a sideways look at Han, and despite the seriousness of the situation, Leia had to fight to keep from smiling. Han was at his absolutely most intimidating, standing stiff and tall, scowling unblinkingly, his hand resting on the blaster holstered at his side. The knuckles of his gun hand were slightly whitened with pressure as he gripped the weapon, a subtlety she suggested to him on the trip here from Coruscant, and one that clearly wasn't lost on its intended audience. He would have been even more intimidating with Bark Kimp and Sakasak standing there beside him, but Bothans didn't much like Nogri, and Leia had decided this situation was ticklish enough already, without that extra strain. The two Nogri were lurking somewhere outside, a quick comlink call away if they were needed. But she wasn't expecting them to be. Between the official weight she was bringing to bear, and the threat of more physical consequences from Han, they had Arausia in a tight squeeze already. With luck, that should give them a good chance of getting to the financial records before anyone was able to hide or alter them.
I personally need nothing more, Captain Solo, the secretary said. The problem is that only one of the combined clan leaders may grant authorization to see the records you are requesting, and none are on this part of Bothawi at present.
Han took another step toward him.
You've got the letter from President Gaverson, and...
Please.
Leia held up a hand.
Secretary Arausia, I understand your situation. I believe that there may be another way out of the problem. Do I understand correctly that in his capacity as New Republic representative, Counselor Phalia would also have access to the financial records we seek?
The Bothan's eyes darted between the two of them, clearly suspecting a trap.
I believe he does, he answered cautiously. I would have to check the regulations.
Leia looked at Han, lifted her eyebrows slightly.
Here,
Han said, thrusting a data card at the secretary.
I've marked the place.
Arausia started to take the card, hesitated, then dropped his hand back to his side.
I'll accept your word on that, he said. But I don't see how that point is relevant. Counselor Phalia isn't here, and a mere letter cannot extend such privileges to another person.
True,
Leia said with a nod.
However, such privileges do extend to Counselor Phalia's personal possessions, do they not?
Arausia frowned.
What do you mean?
I mean possessions such as his personal computers,
Leia said.
Or his droids?
The Bothan looked at 3PO, and this time the fur definitely flattened.
His... but...
Han nudged his shoulder with the data card.
That part's marked too.
And here's the record of Phalia's ownership,
Leia added, producing another data card. Mechanically, Arausia took the two data cards, his eyes on the golden droid standing silent and aloof, with quiet hauteur. At least that's what Leia hoped he saw. In actual fact, 3PO was being aloof and silent for the simple reason that he was too embarrassed and chagrined for words. It was bad enough he'd complained over and over on the trip here that Luke had given him to Jabba the Hutt during their rescue of Han on Tatooine. But to be summarily sold to a Bothan diplomat without any notice whatsoever was an utter disgrace. It didn't matter to him that the sale was only on data file and not genuine. As far as he was concerned, the deceit involved only made it worse. But Arausia didn't know that.
I see,
the Bothan said, his voice rather flat, his eyes still on 3PO.
I...
he trailed off.
Record room's on the third floor, right?
Han demanded into the silence.
If you'd rather wait down here,
Leia added,
I'm sure we can find what we're looking for by ourselves.
Arausia's fur seemed to wilt.
No, I must escort you,
he murmured.
Follow me, please.
He led them across the atrium to a wide, free-span ceremonial stairway, arching gracefully between the first and second floors. Apparently the only route from the more or less public departments on the first floor to the private offices and meeting rooms above. At the top of the stairway was a wide overlook balcony, also clearly designed with ceremony in mind. Ceremonial or not, though, the Bothans hadn't scrimped on security. A pair of armed guards stood at the bottom of the staircase, and Leia could see the camouflaged poles of a static barrier built into the banisters on either side a few steps up. She also wondered how many of the privacy-glazed office windows peeking through the short trees and bushy borshi and kef vrees vines from the top two floors had hidden guards watching the stairway and the atrium. Knowing the Bothans, probably at least one of them. But no one, hidden guards or otherwise, interfered, as Arausia led the party to the top of the staircase, then along a corridor to a more standard set of stairs leading to the third floor, and finally to a door marked simply Archives. There the secretary paused, but if he was having second thoughts, they weren't going to be given time to ripen. Brushing past him, Han opened the door and went in. Five other Bothans were in the room, seated at various data retrieval stations. All of them were looking at the door as Leia stepped inside behind Han with expressions and postures that could have been either surprise or guilt.
"That one will do," Leia said,
pointing to an unoccupied retrieval station near the door.
"Go ahead and get started, 3PO.
Silently, 3PO shuffled off toward the station.
"Thank you, Secretary Arausia,"
Leia added to their escort.
"We'll call you if we need any further assistance."
"I will be available for whatever you require,"
Arausia said. Turning, he left the room, closing the door behind him. Beside Leia, Han made a rude-sounding noise.
"She'd think Faelia would have mentioned in his letter that we're on their side here," he muttered.
"I'm sure he did," Leia agreed. "But these are Bothans. They see hidden blades everywhere."
Han grimaced.
"Especially coming from other Bothans."
"It's how their internal politics work," Leia reminded him, squeezing his arm. "Come on, let's get this over with."
The order had specified a large crowd, and Navit had assured Major Tierce that his team could deliver. But now, looking at the edges of the crowd that he could see from his rooftop vantage point, a crowd that had already overflowed all available standing space in the Merchant Square, even he was impressed. This time, Cliff had definitely outdone himself.
"Navit?"
Penson's voice came from the tiny speaker in Navit's left ear.
"Looks like they're ready to move."
"Right,"
Navit said, moving the attached microphone a little closer to his lips. It was a military-style comlink, scavenged from a stormtrooper helmet, and would probably be trouble if he was caught with it. But the hands-free design was more private and convenient than standard civilian cylinder types, with a better real-time encryption. Anyway, he wasn't planning to get caught.
"You'd better get in position."
"What's the makeup like?"
"It's a real mix this time. I've got a bunch of spacers of all types from the port area. But there are a lot of shoppers and merchants, too. Everything from human to Ishori and Rhodian. Got a bunch of Frothly, too. I can see those stupid hair spurs poking up above the rest of the crowd."
"Good."
Aside from the general hot-headedness of the species itself, the Frothly government was one of the few that had already come out publicly for sanctions against the Bothans. A species grounded on vindictiveness and the fact that the Bothans had spent the past 15 years systematically grinding the Frothly light machinery industry to dust certainly hadn't helped matters.
"Make sure you're out of their way when they start their charge."
"Don't worry,"
Penson said dryly.
"Oops. Okay, there they go. Next stop, the Combined Clans building. You all set?"
"All set,"
Navit said, stroking the stock of the Night Stinger's sniper blaster rifle lying on the roof beside him.
"Let's do it."
"Shh," Han said, frowning with concentration.
"You hear that?"
Leia looked up from the retrieval station.
"I didn't hear anything."
"It sounded like thunder,"
Han said, straining his ears.
"Or a crowd, or... there it is again."
"It's a crowd,"
Leia said, that Jedi look on her face.
"And they're getting louder."
Han looked at the other Bothans in the room. None of them seemed to have noticed the noise.
"Must be pretty good-sized if we can hear them all the way in here."
The Jedi look was getting more intense.
"I don't like this, Han,"
she said.
"There's something not right here."
"Maybe it's one of those demonstrations that have been cropping up lately,"
Han said, moving toward the door.
"Stay here. I'll go check it out."
The Boffins in the archive room might not have figured out what was happening, but the rest of the building was already on it. The corridor outside was alive with hurrying Boffins, some carrying boxes of data cards or other equipment, others just hurrying. Crossing past an overview that looked down on the atrium, he saw what seemed to be the entire first-floor staff hustling up the big ceremonial stairway, most of them carrying boxes and equipment, too. A handful of Boffins were bucking the trend, heading down the stairs. All of that group were carrying blasters. The atrium, Han decided, didn't look like a particularly good place to be at the moment. Fortunately, he wasn't going to have to go down there. Both the second and third floors had observation balconies facing the front of the building, where he'd be able to assess the situation. Threading his way through the hurrying Boffins, he headed that direction. A bit of trial and error to find which office the balcony was connected to, and he pushed open the sliding privacy glass door and looked outside. It was worse than he'd feared. The crowd was huge, filling the entire street as humans and aliens continued to stream toward the building. He stepped out onto the balcony for a better look, and as he did so, a figure near the front of the crowd shouted and waved wildly as he pointed up. Automatically, Han's hand dropped to his blaster.
"Citizens of the New Republic!"
a deep Boffin voice called from somewhere nearby.
"I respectfully appeal to you for calm!"
The crowd responded with even more noise, none of it sounding especially calm or respectful. Stepping to the edge of his balcony, Han craned his neck and looked down at the second floor balcony beneath him. There he was, a distinguished-looking elderly male Boffin wearing the elaborate sigil and signet of a clan leader.
"No clan leaders on this part of Bothawi, huh?"
Han muttered, straightening up again. He was no expert, but it sure didn't look like the sort of mob that a little Boffin sugar talk would do much for. Which suggested the smart thing would be for him to get back inside and back to Leia, just in case. Giving the crowd one last look, he started to turn away. The front of the crowd had reached the combined clans building now, the people behind them pushing and jostling past and filling in around the sides. Resting the stock of his blaster rifle against his shoulder, Nabbit squinted experimentally through the macrobinocular sight running along the barrel. Almost time. And then, just as he'd known they would, the Boffin sent a representative onto the lower balcony to talk to the mob. The figure lifted his hands for silence, without any noticeable effect, of course, and Nabbit was just beginning to line up his crosshairs when another figure appeared. This one on the upper balcony. A human. Frowning, Nabbit shifted his aim upward and tightened his focus, and felt his eyes widen in disbelief. Han Solo. It was Han Solo, hero of the Rebellion, New Republic shipping liaison, and general all-around troublemaker. And there he was, standing on a balcony right in front of him. Nabbit had always considered himself to be leading a charmed life, but sometimes even he couldn't believe his own luck.
"Nabbit!"
Penson's voice came excitedly in his ear.
"Up on the top balcony."
"I see him," Nabbit said, striving to sound cool and professional. Han Solo himself. This was just too good to be true.
"So which one do we do?"
Nabbit smiled tightly.
"Both, of course. You've got a spare, don't you?"
"Well, yes."
"So we do both," Nabbit told him. "And we start with Solo. Give me a count."
"Right,"
Penson said.
5 seconds. 4, 3...
Han had been gone only a few seconds when the door suddenly bounced open again.
"Counselor Canna Solo,"
Secretary Orausia said, breathing heavily.
"We desperately need your assistance.
There is a mob moving on this building!
Yes, I know, Leia said. What is it you want me to do?
Defend us, of course!
The Bothan snapped, jabbing a hand at the lightsaber hanging unobtrusively beneath her loose overjacket.
Are you not a Jedi?
Leia suppressed a sigh. There were still so many people out there who refused to see Jedi in any role except that of armed defender or combatant.
Perhaps I could try talking to them, she suggested gently.
Askar clan leader Railscar has already gone to do that,
Arausia said, fur rippling with nervous impatience.
Please, they may break in at any time.
All right, Leia said, standing up. So much for there being no clan leaders on this part of Bothawi, but this wasn't the time to bring that up. 3PO, you'd better come too.
Me?
The droid gasped, cringing back as only 3PO could do.
But Mistress Leia...
I might need you to translate, Leia cut him off. Let's go!
They had to buck the general flow of Bothans streaming upward as they descended the main stairway.
Mistress Leia, there seems to be some considerable concern among the residents here.
3PO called over the hurrying feet and the rumble of the crowd outside.
Might I suggest we reconsider our strategy?
There won't be any trouble,
Leia assured him, grabbing hold of one of his arms to keep them from getting separated.
Most of the time, the worst these demonstrators have done is to throw spoiled fruit and stones. If I can persuade them that their concerns are being considered, maybe I can get them to disperse without even doing that much.
They reached the bottom of the stairway, easing through the three-deep cordon of Bothan guards blocking off the lower end, and hurried toward the front doors.
I merely thought we might wish to reevaluate,
3PO continued, his rapidity of speech increasing with his nervousness, which was increasing with roughly every other step.
There are two balconies we could speak from after all, and even spoiled produce properly placed can be hazardous to the inner workings of a droid.
Quiet!
Leia cut him off, breaking to a halt a few meters from the door. Suddenly, something felt different out there. A hint of evil purpose flickering at the edges of the simmering anger and resentment of the crowd. She stretched out with the force, trying to pin it down. And then, to her horror, an all-too-familiar sound split through the rumble like a crack of lightning through distant thunder. The sound of a blaster shot. There was no warning, none whatsoever. 1 minute, Han was looking out over the crowd, wondering if he should call Leia and suggest she come out here and talk to them. And then the next minute, there it was, making a sound like a boot in wet mud as it came out of nowhere to hit the wall by his left shoulder. He half turned to look at it, got just a glimpse of a mass of a soft-looking gray clay with a small tube connected to a multifaceted crystal embedded in the middle, and suddenly it seemed to explode in a brilliant flash of blaster fire. He wrenched back, twisting his face away from the flash as a needle jab of pain stabbed into his left shoulder. From somewhere below him came a scream of pain, and even as he dropped behind the minimal protection of the balcony's guardrail, he heard the sound and caught the flicker of reflected light from a second shot. Yanking his blaster from its holster, blinking around the hazy purple blob floating in front of his eyes, he tried to see where the attack was coming from. Wherever the gunman was, he didn't seem in a hurry to give away his position by shooting again. But his first two shots had already done enough damage. Below, and 10 meters ahead, the crowd had opened a circle around a Mishtak writhing in agony on the ground. A few meters behind him, in the middle of another circle, a Larissai lay still. With the two shots, the crowd had gone deathly quiet. A motion caught the corner of Han's eye. Someone moving on a rooftop a block away. He half stood up, lifting his blaster.
There he is!
Someone shouted. Han looked down again. Someone in the crowd was pointing up, but he was pointing at Han.
Oh, wait a minute,
Han began.
There he is!
The man shouted again.
There's the murderer!
and as if on signal, the crowd suddenly came to life again. Roaring like 100 berserk rancors, they surged forward beneath the balcony, and with a slam that shook the whole building, they threw open the doors.
Han!
Leia blurted as the second blaster shot rang out.
If he'd been the target...
No, she realized with a flood of relief. She could still feel his presence, alert and tense. But somebody out there had been hit. She could sense the waves of pain. Stretching out with the force, she tried to locate it. And then, suddenly, there was a horrendous roar from the crowd outside. And in front of her, the doors slammed open, and a solid wall of beings poured into the atrium.
Oh my! Mistress Leia!
Get behind me! Leia snapped, taking a long step to the side and grabbing for her lightsaber as she threw a quick glance at the ceremonial stairway at the other end of the atrium. With some serious effort, she should be able to reach it ahead of the crowd. But 3PO didn't have that kind of speed, and if she abandoned him to the mob...
Get behind me!
She ordered the droid again, igniting the lightsaber. She had come here to talk, and she had better get started. The nearest of the crowd shied away as the lightsaber blade blazed into existence, many of them probably only noticing her for the first time.
Citizens of the New Republic, she shouted, holding the lightsaber high. I'm New Republic Counselor and Jedi Knight Leia Organa Solo. I call on you to stop.
The people nearest Leia faltered in their charge, many of them coming to an almost reluctant halt. Or rather, trying to do so. The rest of the crowd behind them, unaware of Leia's presence, were still pushing forward, jostling those in front or forcing their way around and past them. They continued to flow into the building. But at least the momentum of the crowd had been slowed, and Leia had the beginnings of an attentive audience. Now if she could project her voice to enough of them... and could find the right words to say with that voice. She took a deep breath, running through her Jedi strength enhancement techniques, and opened her mouth. And at that moment, there was a shout from the Bothan guards grouped at the foot of the stairway, and a half dozen blaster bolts flashed into the crowd. And the whole thing went straight to chaotic hell. Leia thought the crowd had been at the peak of its noise level. She'd been wrong. The screams from the injured were all but lost in a roar of fury and terror so loud it hurt her ears. The front rank of the crowd fell apart, many of the beings trying to hide behind the short trees and bushes, or else scurrying madly for cover toward the offices lining the atrium's edges. Others simply froze where they were, unwilling to turn tail and run, but equally unwilling to walk into massed blaster fire. The Bothans fired again, sparking more screams. But this time, the shots were answered. From a dozen places in the crowd, blasters opened up, and six of the guards toppled to the floor.
That's it!
A voice from the mob shouted over the roar.
Everyone! Get them!
Wait!
Leia shouted.
Stop!
But it was too late. The crowd, mindless with rage, was rolling forward now like a flash tide. Blasters firing freely as the atrium suddenly became a war zone. Even those whose advance had been slowed by the sight of Leia's lightsaber were no longer listening. And in fact, most had already deserted her or been dragged away by the mob. Twice she had to lift her lightsaber high over her head as the buffeting and shoving nearly sent someone into the blade. Dimly over the noise, she heard 3PO wail something, but by the time she was able to turn around, he had vanished. A kill bounced toward her, whistling excitedly through his hulupai and waving a blaster toward the stairway. Completely oblivious to the lightsaber blade he was drifting toward, and with a dark recognition of defeat, Leia shut down the weapon, using the force to keep the kill from slamming into her. There was nothing more she could do here. Those who were still firing were halfway across the crowd, impossible for her to reach. And none of the beings nearest her had done anything to deserve the death or dismemberment that was the only punishment her lightsaber could mete out. Too many minds here for her to quiet. Too many flailing bodies for her to move aside with the force. And all that was left
was for her to try to keep from getting trampled. And then, through all the chaos that surrounded her, she caught a faint hint of something different. Someone not far away. Someone quietly terrified for her safety. Han. She strained to see, but without the blazing lightsaber blade to keep them at bay, the crowd had closed in and was now pressing too close for her to be able to see anywhere but up. For a moment, she searched the silent windows facing down into the atrium as she fought to keep her balance. But if Han was up there, she couldn't spot him. But there was something there, almost directly above her head now. A thick tendril of borshi vine jutting out from the atrium wall. Pushing through the crowd in that direction, using the force to ease people aside when necessary, she maneuvered herself beneath it. Then, stretching out again to the force, she bent her knees and jumped. The tendril was no more than 2 meters above her, an easy jump for a Jedi. She made it with half a meter to spare, grabbing onto the tendril and using it to pull herself to the main body of the borshi vine where it clung its meandering way up the wall. From her new vantage point, she was able to see Han now. Crouched beside the railing on the ceremonial balcony, his blaster pointed down the stairway, his eyes searching anxiously through the mob for signs of his wife. Flanking him on either side, looking ready to dive off the balcony into the crowd if and when it became necessary, were Barkimk and Sokasak. How and when the two Nogri had managed to sneak into the building, Leia didn't know. But at the moment, it didn't matter. The Bothan guards at the foot of the stairway were down, shot, or trampled, and the entire weight of the mob seemed to be pressed against the static barrier a few steps up. But it wouldn't hold them for long. Even at this distance, she could see the faint sparking that meant the barrier was about to go down. And when it did, it would be a disaster for everyone. If Han had any hidden Bothan guards open fire as the crowd stormed up the stairway, the result would be the slaughter of dozens or even hundreds of people. But if they didn't open fire, there would be an equally callous slaughter of the Bothans who had escaped to the upper two floors. One way or another, a large number of people were about to die. Unless... One of the Nogri had spotted her now, pointing the other's attention her direction. Han half rose from his crouch, his mouth working with shouted words she couldn't hear. "I'm all right," she thought desperately toward him, risking her grip to try to wave him back. If he or the Nogri headed down into that chaos, they'd probably get torn apart. But no, he understood. Sinking back into his crouch, he waved the Nogri back, his eyes locked on hers across the atrium.
"All right," the expression seemed to say. "If you don't want us to come get you, what do you want?"
"Here," she thought toward him, risking her grip again and unhooking her lightsaber. For a moment, she fought against the bushy tendrils trying to entangle it. Then she got it free and held it up. Cocking her arm over her shoulder, she threw it across the atrium, catching it midway in a force grip and guiding it the rest of the way to drop into Han's hand. For a few heartbeats, he fingered the weapon, frowning across the distance at her. She gestured and sent her thoughts toward him, and abruptly, he got it. Nodding his understanding, he ignited the weapon and turned the blade to point down and began cutting the stairway free from the balcony. The action hadn't gone unnoticed. Someone in the crowd roared, and a pair of blaster bolts lanced out, missing Han by bare centimeters as he ducked away. The Nogri at Han's side, the second Nogri, Leia noticed, with mild surprise, had somehow pulled a vanishing act, fired back, and the other blaster went silent. Something brushed the back of Leia's head. She twisted around, her mind flashing back to the deadly vine snakes of Wayland. But it wasn't a vine snake, or for that matter any other kind of creature. It was a length of synth rope, dangling from one of the windows directly above her, with Barkimp's anxious face looking down at her from behind it. Grabbing the rope, she started to climb. She was nearly to the window when, behind her, the stairway crashed to the floor.
"Admiral Pelion!"
With a jolt, Pelion snapped awake.
the disturbing dream vanishing into the darkness of his quarters.
Yes,
he called.
Major Tassel, sir.